This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's been four decades, but a former West Virginia Olympian says he'll never forget competing in the 1984 Olympics.
Whether you finish at the top or at the bottom, to be a participant and to represent your country is a great honor.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. The Allegheny Front, based in Pittsburgh, is a public radio program that reports on environmental issues in the region. Here's their latest story about an effort in Pennsylvania to establish wildlife corridors for the safety of animals and drivers.
Pennsylvania is looking into helping wildlife move across the landscape and away from roadways. This is the Allegheny Front Environment Update. I'm Kara Holsapple. Last year, House Resolution 87 passed with bipartisan support in the state legislature. It called for a report on the use of wildlife corridors to protect wildlife and keep people and animals safe from collisions. The report was released by the Legislative Budget and Finance Committee in June. It's something Sally Sims has been advocating for as co-founder of Pennsylvania Habitat Connectivity, a loosely organized group advocating for these issues. I asked Sims what connectivity means for wildlife.
This is a conservation principle that's been around for a while, is that it's important for species, animals, plants, fish, reptiles, to have habitat that's connected so they can get their food, they can mate, they have areas to rest, they have areas to move and migrate either during the day or across seasons, especially with in response to climate change, in response to increased residential and commercial development pressure, and also disease and invasive species. So the idea is to make sure that the landscape is permeable, meaning that animals can move, whether they're big bobcats or whether they're, you know, box turtles.
What do wildlife corridors look like on the ground?
A lot of people think of the highway overpasses that connect a protected state forest with another area that might have a conservation easement on it. And that's certainly one thing. It can look like an actual structure. It can be a culvert, it could be a bridge, or it could just be a series of connected lands that have understanding of, like, okay, when these animals pass through, you know, there's going to be space for them to do that. And there's going to be relationships with people that will allow them to do that.
According to the report, in 2022, 4,500 deer-related and 207 other animal-related, what they call wildlife vehicle collisions, were reported to PennDOT. In that year, seven people died. What does the report tell us about the reporting of collisions and how that can be avoided?
Basically, we have much more data that we need to get. There isn't complete data. Not everyone that's in an accident reports it. And the insurance companies don't have complete data on it. And PennDOT doesn't have complete data on it. So there are recommendations, too, in the report about increasing ways of reporting that so that that can be taken into consideration as part of a bigger picture of setting priorities across the landscape.
There are a lot of recommendations in the report, but for you, what are the most important recommendations?
We've been working as a group, talking to the main natural resource agencies that have conservation of these precious resources under their care. DCNR, Conservation and Natural Resources Department, the Fish and Boat Commission, and the Game Commission. So the greatest takeaway that I get is the one that encourages the governor to convene an ecological connectivity working group with those key natural resource agencies and their partners, such as the Western Pennsylvania Conservancy. There's a lot of information out there, but really what happens is people need to sit down at a map and think about the kind of priorities that we want to have. And I think that's something that sometimes isn't really covered in conservation. People think, oh, conservation is science, and then people make decisions. Well, conservation is values, too. And there's a lot of values that are the same across all these agencies.
Sally Sims is an independent climate and conservation consultant and co-founder of Pennsylvania Habitat Connectivity. There's a link to the state's report at AlleghenyFront.org. That's the Allegheny Front Environment Update. I'm Kara Holsapple.
The Allegheny Front is based in Pittsburgh and reports on regional environmental news. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:50. Mostly sunny skies today. Highs in the 70s and 80s. Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the 50s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, highs in the 70s and 80s. Support for WVPB is provided by Festival Charleston. Presenting Three Things at 815 Court Street, Wednesday, August 21st at 7 p.m. Featuring Sarah Rudy, John Nelson, and Bishop Baylor, a.k.a. Michael Young. FestivalCharleston.com. The 2024 Paris Olympics concluded last night, but for the athletes that participated in the games, the memories will last a lifetime. Ed Etzel was a West Virginia University rifle coach when he registered a near-perfect shooting score to win a gold medal at the 1984 Los Angeles Olympics. He recently spoke with reporter Chris Schultz about his experience and perspective 40 years on.
Tell me a little bit about how you came to find yourself competing in shooting.
I wouldn't say it was rural, but I grew up in North Haven, Connecticut. My dad would say, well, you guys, my brother and I need to learn how to shoot. So we had a little tiny .22 rifle and shot cans into a big old tree. We joined a club in New Haven, Connecticut at the old Winchester Arms Factory. And I just got better and better at it. I found it challenging. You know, it doesn't look like much. Some people say, well, if we're going to watch you shoot, it's sort of like watching paint dry. But if you're actually doing it, it's much more complicated. And when I was 12, I won the state championship. I mean, that's fine. I didn't really quite know what that meant, but it was a nice thing. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I'm pretty good at this. And so I went on a scholarship to St. John's University in New York City and stayed there for one semester. And I got a letter out of the blue to from Tennessee Tech University in Cookeville, Tennessee, which is an engineering school. Finished my education, and then I went on somewhat of a hiatus. I went on active duty during the Vietnam War and eventually went to the Army Marksmanship Unit. And during that time, I was a world champion for the first time. And after that, I came here and I continued to shoot. And I did that into the Olympics in 1984, and I retired. I retired from shooting the day after the Olympics.
Were you seeking out an Olympic berth?
Yes and no. I think every year we had a national championship, and I had participated in that. Every year, you know, you try out for a team like that. You know, I continued to do that every year, and I kind of got better and better and better. In 83, I was very close to making the Pan American team, and I didn't. And I dedicated myself to really doing as best I could. And so, you know, all that time, I was involved in physical activity, was involved in psychological training. That's always been an anchor for me, to be emotionally intelligent and reasonably under control, if you will, because, you know, you can really lose it. I mean, you can get pretty nervous. And in 1984, I made the team and compete in two events. The first one, I won a gold medal. The second one, after I did not do that well, I finished 15th, and part of that was, I think, related to there's a lot of media hype and sort of a lot of interviews, and I remember going to do Good Morning America at midnight in Hollywood, but that kind of threw me off, and I really wasn't as prepared as I was for the first event. So, you know, the mental aspect of all of that has been important to me, and that's sort of the path. I retired again right after the Olympics.
What was that experience like to actually, you know, medal?
Somebody else asked me this not too long ago. You know, you go with what got you there. And that's what I did. I didn't really change anything. It was a little nerve-wracking. My first shot was nerve-wracking, but it was right in the middle. And I just shot very fast, which is a stylistic thing. And I finished the whole thing, 60 shots in 25 minutes. So I was moving on, and that was a strategy. We had several thousand people watching this. Usually you have those people who work there and folks who accidentally drift by, you know. So that was a little different. Plus I had three or four ABC TV cameras on me the whole time. I felt confident, and I was my goal was really not to go there to win an Olympic gold medal, but to do what I could do and be in the moment. And after that, there was a lot of attention. We had no press person. It was exhausting after that. I didn't jump up and down and go yoo-hoo or anything like that. And subsequent to that, I was busy doing other stuff, interviews and things of that nature, and trying to rest up for the other thing, which didn't really turn out.
If there's anything else that I haven't given you a chance to discuss with me, or if there's something that you'd like to highlight that we've already touched upon.
Well, I would say one thing, whether you finish at the top or at the bottom, to be a participant and to represent your country is a great honor. It was a great honor for me to do that, and also to represent the people of West Virginia. But it's nice to share all of those things with other people, because we'll laugh and be forgotten with the rest, to be quite frank. It's something that you value that has to do with representing and other people and doing good for other people. It should not be about you. So I think looking at that big picture of how it's a privilege to represent your country and this state, met tons of people, and found out how much actually the medal was worth. I brought it to my jeweler, John Keene in Morgantown, and I said, "Hey, this thing is rusting. Tell me how much it's worth." And he said, "Mind if I scratch?" I said, "I don't care. It's rusting." He goes, "Well, you know, they sprayed it with gold, and it's worth about $30, but it's probably worth a lot more than that to you." And I think that's a really interesting metaphor for the whole thing. You know, it's not made of gold. It won't last forever. But it's something you need to know is about you, but it's also about the people who got you there and your coaches and other things like representing your country. It's a much bigger picture than what we see on TV and all that type of thing.
That was Ed Edsall speaking with Chris Schultz about his Olympic experience 40 years ago. To read a longer version of this interview, visit our website at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Maria Young. Maria Young produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.